for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. We have an exciting show today. Actually, we're going to be doing a little drinking on the show. We're going to do some taste testing. My guest today is Brian Christensen, founder and chief executive owl, we'll have to talk about that, of Blinking Owl Distillery, located here in Santa Ana, California. Brian, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before I start, I love the story about kind of your history and your bootlegging grandfather. My grandfather used to make wine in the back, and that's another episode. But it was Fred Armbrust. We got it. Had a distill on his dairy farm, hidden in the basement behind secret passageways. All right, and he would covertly provide the local farmers a lot of good spirits, and that kind of rolled down to you over the years. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about that story, his passion about what he was trying to accomplish, and of course, what you're trying to accomplish now. So before we get started, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and Blinking Owl.
Okay, so I'm Brian. I had an idea to start a distillery here in Orange County. Been following trends across the country and, you know, this return to regional things, food, beer, wine, why not alcohol as well? Mm-hmm. So my background, though, you know, in my spare time, I used to, you know, homebrew, studied wine, made wine through the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. Then that sparked my interest in learning more about distilling, so I started doing some distilling coursework, which then put all the pieces back together, like, oh, hey, that's what bootlegging is, and my great-grandfather illegal distilling. Okay, so let me see what oral history I can dig up with this whole thing. Fast forward, lengthy business plan rewritten multiple times, and we've been operational just about 3 years.
Okay. So now, if people don't know about the Blinking Owl, hopefully they will after this. And I was online looking at some of the pictures, and it looks absolutely gorgeous. I have to admit, I've not been there. We met at an event up in Santiago Canyon area. Yes. The place where the White Tiger is. That's the only thing I can remember.
Rancho Las Lomas.
Yeah, the White Tiger.
Yes.
And had a chance to taste some of your bourbon, mm-hmm. which we're going to do some new tasting of a different version of your bourbon today. And so that prompted, obviously, this conversation. You know, you mentioned, this is in less than a minute, you told me about that history of how you got here. But how long did that really take from the idea to
to where we are now? It's probably closer to 6 years. I mean, from the day before I sat my wife down and told her what I wanted to do, you know, it was thinking about it and learning and teaching myself about it. And then from her saying, yeah, this sounds like a good idea, let's write a business plan. I mean, we dedicated a solid 6 months to writing the plan, gave it to some friends, some colleagues, our attorney. They tore it apart, rewrote it, so we got it to the point where we thought it was solid. Then we went out to pitch potential investors. So once we had the startup funding, you know, it was another 3 years to get through permitting and build out and into production. So it was a lengthy process. When you're first to market, there's a lot of trail you got to cut down.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Well, you know what? First of all, I'm going to commend you. We were just getting to know each other, and I'm my day job is a fractional chief marketing officer, and I work with a lot of businesses, and most of them do not have business plans or strategic plans or growth plans. So the fact that you went through, are you listening, audience? This is a lesson number one from today. You've got to plan. You've heard me talk about it before. You've got to do the due diligence to make sure it's just not a hobby and you're running out there and making things happen only to find out you weren't prepared for all the things that were going on. So I do commend you on that, absolutely.
Thank you, and I would say you have to keep readjusting that plan because it changes on a daily basis.
Yes. So I'm going to talk about for a second about your background in advertising, and again, we talked that that's kind of my background, but I jokingly say, and I've said it on the show before, about getting my clients to do planning and then going in for a 6-month review or an 8-month review and literally walking over to the bookshelf, taking it off, blowing the dust off it. And it's like, oh man, you know, this is a living, breathing document. It changed the minute I walked out the door 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And you have to treat it that way. And it sounds like that's what you do.
Yes, it's constant. You have to pivot. There's things you think you know and you plan for that happen that you couldn't have planned for. So it's a constant reevaluation, and not just on my part, but all of our team. You know, especially we are a startup, so you know, things ebb and flow and start and stop. So yeah. it's not easy.
Yeah, 6 years in the making, and you're still a startup. That's yep. a great way to look at it. So there's a couple questions that I do ask before we kind of get into the rest of this.
Okay.
When you think about growing your business, what keeps you up at night?
Payroll, all the little things, keeping the lights on, paying for everything. It's expenses are huge. And how do we make it successful? How do we survive? Those are the things that keep us up. 24 hours and then 2 years from now, because I don't want to be in the same position in 2 years. So there's a lot of things that keep me up at night.
Okay. All right. And the second question I like to ask is, what is the best business advice you've ever given or received, if it's different?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. The best I've ever been given is, you never know how successful you can be if you don't try. So dreaming it does no good without any action or actually giving it. And to that same note, I was told, you know, failure doesn't mean anything as like the same that we think it is. You know, I don't want to fail, but had a person tell me that it's quite successful. That's like, I failed at a million businesses before I found one that worked and was successful. So I thought that was really good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been fortunate. I've had a couple really good successes, but as I usually say, I've got a lot of dead bodies along the road, a lot of litter that didn't quite make it, crumpled up pieces of paper. But to your point, you can't play if you don't buy the lotto ticket, right? You can't win if you don't buy the ticket.
Exactly.
So before we start talking about the distillery, though, I do want to just probe a little about your background in advertising and marketing. I don't know if you're from the creative side or the account side, and where were you?
So I was on the creative side. I was an art director at a small agency here in Orange County called Akins Parker. I did a lot of freelance before that. So the great thing about this agency is we worked on large national accounts as well as small local accounts. And because of the small nature of this agency, we got to do more than just creative. So we were a lot more client involved than I would have been if I was, say, at one of these big houses where you just get stuck in the creative corner. So I had a lot of face time with, you know, the top of the account. So it was really a great experience. So from, you know, I get to come up with the design, then I have to manage the production and the implementation. And fortunately, I didn't have to handle the billing or any of that. But it was
good. Might have been good practice with the business, though, right?
Exactly. It was great just to learn additional aspects of the business other than just doing creative because, you know, I learned a lot from being in front of clients directly. You know, I was the loose cannon at that place, so they loved it, and it scared them a little bit, like, don't say the wrong thing. But they found it to be, you know, a real asset, because I would put clients at ease, and, you know, I could handle the project, make sure it makes them look good, the client look good, you know, our contact at the client. So it was a great time, but I never felt like I wanted to be stuck in one job forever. So whether I did the distillery or not, I'd be looking for whatever the next sure. move is, which probably would be involved in some type of creative, but not necessarily. So if that right. makes any sense.
Well, sure. And when we think of advertising, there's a certain idea of what creative is, but everything we do can be creative. And I always like to look at it that way. So my background on the agency side is marketing and market research and insights, and that's kind of what I do now is insights, brand, and plan. I do all the strategy work, and I work with creative teams. And I grew an agency, which is ironically was called the Ponzi Group, and I kind of got that name back. And then people that bought me turned me into an agency called Open Minds. And a lot of our clients were the Jackson family of wines. We handled mm-hmm. like five or six or seven different wines, Kettle One Vodka, Seagram's Vodka, Kirin Beer. And so I've been in that world before, and it was a lot of fun, especially around Christmas time.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
used to get those gifts. So, so let's talk about now, as you moved in, the decision as an entrepreneur to leave the paycheck, I'll call it, to step out on your own. I mean, what you were working, you were laying this foundation, but at one point in time it was like, okay, I got to take that step.
Well, it was, I would say my experience was probably a little easier than most because my wife, who's also my business partner, she's always been an entrepreneur. She has never worked for anybody. She had already had her business planned and started before she even graduated with her master's in physical therapy. So this type of thing didn't scare her. We had her former business for over, well, I think it was about 12 years. So we kind of understand the ebbs and flows and the uncomfortableness of having your own business, right? Yes, it was nice to always have a guaranteed paycheck, and it would be nice now to have a guaranteed paycheck. But I think that prepped us to be able to be uncomfortable and know that it's feast or famine, you know, mm-hmm. and you just have to be prepared to deal with that.
Yeah.
So I think that was really helpful. Having been through it, you know, lived through her business, so it kind of prepared me.
Sure. Yeah. My wife actually and I were business partners for between our own agency and then the people that bought us when we went there. I mean, it was almost 20 years that we worked very closely together, and we don't now, but that's an I do miss working with her day to day, but I see her every day, of course, so that she's a good person to bounce stuff off of. Let's transition now into the distillery.
Yes.
And a couple quick questions. So okay. Where did Blinking Owl come from?
So not wanting to take ourselves too serious, but we take everything we do extremely serious. I wanted a way to pay homage to the city where we distill, which is Santa Ana. And I'm not from Orange County originally, although I've lived here since 2000 or 2001. So I moved to Santa Ana in 2003 and met all these wonderful people who taught me about the rich heritage and history of the city. One of my friends was telling me about how the streets used to be lined with these very cool old buildings, showed me archived pictures, neon signs lit the streets, bars, restaurants, retailers. One of these bars happened to be called the Blinking Owl Bar, and it was kind of infamous. It was known for its neon and mechanical sign with an owl that would blink. So I thought that would be a fun way to name this distillery without kind of being so much the same as every other distillery name, or naming it after old grandpappy or something like that.
Yeah.
not that there's anything wrong with that. I love many of those brands, but it didn't seem to fit. We're in Southern California. It's warm. People are happy here. We're laid back. So I wanted something more fun, more kind of mid-century. So that's where the name came from.
Okay. Now in the distillery, you actually make bourbon, gin, vodka, and is what
aquavit,
which is what we're drinking right now.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
And it's wonderful. That's the first time I've ever had it.
It's a unique spirit. I have some Swedish heritage on one side of the family, so that intrigued me to learn about spirits from Scandinavia. This is one we decided to make it. It's currently our most popular spirit in the first 3 years. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, it's quite fun.
Yeah. Is everything sold strictly on site, or are you online? Are you in restaurants and bars?
We are currently available for distribution statewide in California. We're available at over 300 bars, restaurants, and retailers.
Okay.
You can actually visit our website. We keep an updated map of where you can find it. You could ask any of your local retailers to get some for you. They can order it pretty easily. We do sell, We are allowed to legally sell 3 bottles per person per day out of our tasting room during tasting room hours. And then we're also now available through an online retailer for folks who live in the state of Illinois, and working on several other new markets as well.
So are you selling through like Young's or Southern? Or
We're with Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits in their artisanal book, so yes.
All right. Well, fantastic. All right, so I've finished my Aqua V. Now I'm ready for some bourbon. Oh, I got a new glass. Thank you, Paul.
Cool. So
Paul, the engineer, is over there enjoying this as well.
Absolutely.
I don't know who shows after mine, but but they might be having more fun than...
Sir?
Cheers.
Cheers. Get a little here. So,
so why don't you describe what we're drinking?
So we're drinking... This is... Our weeded bourbon whiskey. We make a couple different types or grain bills of bourbon, but this is our weeded. So what that means is it's made from corn, wheat, and malted barley. So this is aged right here in sunny Southern California. Just over 2 years, this is a straight bourbon whiskey, which requires it to be aged at least 2 years. This is made from all organic California-grown grain. That's a big part of our philosophy, is to support local farmers who use sustainable practices in their farming.
Was that part of your business plan about staying local? I've got under certified organic grains, fruits, botanicals, and then from sustainable local farmers. And then you also mill it, mash it, ferment it, distill it, and... In the case of whiskey, age it.
Yes.
Right here. In the facility?
In the facility. Everything is done right here in the facility. So it was really important for us. And one thing that really brought this thing to life for myself and especially my wife is grain. We're kind of grain nerds. We are fans of the farm-to-table movement. When we were researching this distillery, I had already known about this famous chef, Dan Barber. He wrote a book called The Third Plate, got really into the importance of soil, and that led us to having this become part of our philosophy. We really want to, one, tell the story of California terroir or agriculture, two, support and change the farming community. So to give you an idea of the impact we can have is we're not even operating yet at our full capacity, and we're averaging about 15,000 pounds of grain a month. So that's in the overall scheme of things, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it actually can support an entire farm for an entire year.
Wow.
So just the fact that we're putting our money where our mouths are is really important to us.
Well, certainly supporting the community and what we're doing here, and as you do going out into the communities, hopefully getting the community support you as well.
Yes, I think we've had a great response so far. We have a lot of loyal fans and supporters, and it's been awesome to see. So, and we're hoping to continue it, you know?
Right. So as a marketing guy then, advertising guy, when you're going through distribution, but you're also out doing some promotions and marketing yourself. So as a small business, and happens to be in the spirits, but as a small business, what are some of the marketing channels or strategies have you been using to promote the brand?
Well, we try to take as much advantage of free media, social media channels as possible. And it's been a little bit of a learning curve because once you get into this alcohol space, it's so regulated, you have to be extremely careful in how you go about marketing. So, for example, I can't on my Instagram post a picture of an account who's featuring my alcohol in a cocktail. It's illegal. I could have my license suspended. So one, learning these laws, and two, making sure I'm compliant. But what we found is, you know, certain social media channels are the most effective for us. Right now, that would be Instagram and Facebook, which are great. You know, we've experimented with sponsored posts and other angles in marketing, and those much bigger uphill challenge. And then, you know, it's trying to find out what traditional works, what doesn't. So it's kind of like throwing darts and seeing what sticks.
Sure. Well, that's, you know, advertising and marketing has changed so much. I mean, it's, how do we measure? How do we judge? How do we make adjustments as we're going along? Now, we met in an event. So has events become part of your strategy? I know events are expensive.
Yes. And it's and we're trying to figure out which ones give us an ROI, which do not. So it's really we're going to try all of these and see which ones moving forward make sense to participate in. So already this next year, I have to clip off about half of what we did last year because it didn't make sense. We didn't get a big return. It's just like we like to participate in as much charity as possible, but if you saw how many donation requests I get on a daily basis, I'd be out of business if I donated to all of them. So, but events are a big part, especially key events, and it's just learning to identify those.
Yeah, I have some friends in the spirits business, and I won't promote their brands while I'm talking to you, but a lot of times they'll go in and they'll leverage the poor in exchange for everything else, because it otherwise it just becomes very cross prohibitive as you're trying to grow your brand.
Exactly. I think that's kind of been a similar philosophy. Like, we'll participate. We can't afford to pay $1,000 table fee, that type of a thing. Not because we don't think it's valuable. We can't.
Well, it's not. Yeah, $1,000 table plus thousands of dollars in product
and staffing and yeah.
So as a small business, what has been your biggest challenge?
One, distribution is hard because it's so regulated. So, you know, we're so happy we now have a partnership with the biggest distributor in California. They have access to the account, but that's not where it stops. Now we have to go out and sell our own product. Mm-hmm. So that's challenging. And not having ever worked in that side, it's learning new language and how to communicate and how to get buy-in from people. And also, it's always a challenge, how do I message my brand when my resources are limited? It's not like my old job where this client has millions of dollars and we have this great strategy and they can throw money in.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's, well,
and
it's
you're
not
dealing
easy.
With, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're dealing with multiple, because you're dealing with on-premise strategies, you're dealing with off-premise
yes.
strategies, you have your own on-premise that you have to deal with, you're at events.
Yes.
So you've got a lot of different things going on. And you know, in small brands, a lot of the times, and I don't mean to ding distributors a little bit, but they tend to pay a little more attention to the bigger guys, so it makes it a little harder for the smaller guys to get their attention to get pushed.
It is hard, and it's not even that they don't want to pay attention to us, it's just they're getting so much pressure from these big guys to
sure.
sell this. Fortunately, our partnership is proving to be a good one so far, but once again, we were never naive with ourselves. We knew we had to do a lot of the heavy lifting, and if they see we're out willing to help promote and sell the brand, then they're more willing to put more work behind it as well. So.
Okay. So, believe it or not, we are coming to an end. I told you that when we started.
Yes.
It will go by very fast. So, one parting comment for you, and then we'll have you wrap up, is for other small businesses, small to medium-sized businesses that are kind of in your same lane right now, necessarily spirits, but growing, what are two pieces of advice would you give them?
If you plan to open a distillery or you think you want to, opening a distillery just because you like drinking whiskey or vodka or gin is not a good enough reason to do it. I also think you're going to need about five times as much more money than you think you need.
All right.
So I know you. It kind of sounds cliche. We took what we thought we needed and we tripled it, and that's what we raised. And it's still not enough. It's an ongoing thing. So
back to that planning that we talked about at the very beginning, and making adjustments as you go along.
Planning and making adjustments. The other thing I would say is don't be afraid to bring on partners.
All right, fantastic. So thank you so much, and thank you for bringing some spirits. Cheers on
cheers.
That. It tastes fantastic, and I might have to go downstairs and have a coffee before I get it in the car. But so, Brian, that's tell the audience how they can contact you and your website and LinkedIn and all that good stuff.
Awesome. The easiest way is to go to blinkingowldistillery.com. If you'd like to contact me directly, the best way would be info@blinkingowl.com. That will get directed to me. And our website has all pertinent information about tasting room hours, how it works, some other fun stuff on there. So blinkingowldistillery.com.
All right, and you can hold events there as well.
You can hold events.
All right, well, fantastic. Thank you for joining me again
at the cafe
today. Thank you for
having
me. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, view my show videos, or sign up to receive more future information at theponzigroup.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if your business is ready for growth and you need a CMO and you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, reach out to me. I'd love to be able to talk to you about the benefits of a fractional chief marketing officer. And lastly, please subscribe to this show. If you're already a subscriber and you're enjoying it, please encourage others to do so as well. You can find me on any major podcast platform. Thank you again. Cheers.
Cheers.
And join me next week for lunch and drinks at the Business Growth Cafe.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.